Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. It's a feeling that a lot of parents have had. Your child is heading off to college, and you're thinking that just maybe you haven't given them all the advice that they just might need to navigate the next few years. Becky Blades is one of those parents, and she's poured all that advice into a new book, Do Your Laundry or You'll Die Alone. We'll find out in just a little while exactly what she means by that title. But first up today, the death of anti-gay activist Fred Phelps yesterday sparked a lot of reactions, and not all of them were sad. Today we'll take a look at how the news media struggled to cover Phelps over the years. And let me tell you, as a member of the news media myself who covered Fred Phelps for years, the word struggle is probably an understatement. With us today to talk about the media and Fred Phelps is Derek Donovan. He's the reader's representative at the Kansas City Star. Derek, nice to have you back.
It's my pleasure.
Peggy Lowe is a reporter here at KCUR. And Peggy, how are you?
Good morning, Steve.
Well, Derek, Fred Phelps has been on the radar screens of the media in Kansas and across the country for a while now. Any sense of when he first came to the attention of the news media? How did it all play out?
Well, it's interesting. Mary Sanchez actually has a column that she wrote yesterday about the fact that he really courted this media attention from the very beginning, starting in the early 90s.
Yeah.
You know, that was part and parcel of everything that he and his family – I mean, it's wrong really to call them disciples. Virtually everybody who's there is family, although there are apparently a few outsiders now. But their whole thing has been to get attention. There has been no other real purpose behind anything that they've done publicly other than to try to get the news media to turn the cameras on them.
Yeah, it's so interesting. And again, I remember being in Topeka my first days there when Fred was just coming to prominence. You know, he ran for Congress. He ran for governor against as a Democrat against Joan Finney. And it was John Carlin back in the 1990 primary. And he always fell flat, but he kept running. He ran for Topeka mayor at some point subsequent to that. And he began, you know, back in those days, he began putting out these daily faxes back on the old fax machines where the print would sort of, you know, disappear after a few weeks because it was all smudgy and all that stuff. But he put these faxes out and he would go on these diatribes on one issue or another. And invariably, he would pick on a member of the news media that day. And he called me all kinds of names in those. And I've got them tucked away in a scrapbook somewhere. But he would label you as the F word, which was a nasty word for a gay person. And all the members of the media were labeled that as one time or another. And there sort of became a contest to see how many times you could be called that by Fred, because he just began throwing this stuff out. And it was the most bizarre thing you'd ever seen in your life, Peggy.
Right. You know? I think it's been interesting for me this week to hear from guys like you and even Frank Morris, who first came across this guy in Topeka in the early 90s. I came across him in the late 90s because I was at the Denver Post, and we were all covering Matthew Shepard, you know, the gay kid who died in Wyoming. He was lashed to a fence post. And all of a sudden, this crazy man from Topeka, Kansas, named Fred Phelps showed up in Laramie and was going to protest the funeral of Matthew Shepard. And no one had heard of him. I mean, that's really when he came to national prominence. And that's when the first protests against him popped up too, which was pretty interesting.
And I can tell you, Derek, and you may know this as well as I, but the struggles and the ethical struggles the newspaper had trying to navigate exactly how to cover him and whether to cover him, you know, began in those days and really continued right through to the end of his life.
Absolutely. You know, really the whole story of Fred Phelps is kind of a meta discussion about where a media topic kind of overtakes itself and becomes a news story inorganically on its own. Because, again, if there were no cameras turned on him, this is a man who had no real constituency. You know, there is no true following for a character like this.
And just to be clear, this was no mega church in Topeka, in on the west side of Topeka. This was a fairly small, isolated bunch of folks, and I've been there, and I'll talk about it in a few minutes, but some folks have called me this week and said, oh, what are all his followers going to do? Well, wait a minute here. At least the last time I checked, there weren't a lot of people involved here.
And I think that's one of the primary duties that journalists have, is pointing this out and trying to get the right sense of proportion between the fact that, you know, these people are doing these things that are so incredibly troublesome and hurtful to the people that, for example, the funerals that they protest, the survivors, and the very valid emotions that brings up versus the fact that, well, it's still just, you know, a very small number of cranks, most of them in the same family, and, you know, it's not really news. And a lot of this, I have to say, goes for most protests. And I'm not trying to say that the people who protest against the Afghanistan war or, you know, protest against abortion or any of those things, I'm not trying to lump them in with Fred Phelps exactly. But you do have to understand that at their heart, all protests really are designed to attract media coverage. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why people do the demonstrations. I'm not saying that is a negative thing in general, but I think journalists always have to be very circumspect about that.
You know, it's my sense, Derek, again, not speaking just of the Star, but of the other, you know, the broadcast TV outlets in town, public TV, public radio, that by and large, the media ignored Fred Phelps, despite the obvious attempt to grab attention, the way outside the normal bounds of civic discourse that he employed to make his points. But my sense was over the years that, you know, given how well known he was across the country, that the media by and large ignored him.
The old school media, the people who are really professional journalists who really try to measure the journalistic value of something, you're right, they have, and very much by design. Certainly, I know at the Star that editors don't even really think much about it. You know, they just kind of realize, it's something to sort of dismiss, unless some news were to break out. You know, I know there was a guy who tried to hit him with a car once, if I remember correctly. And that is news, because that kind of pushes the story. This is a this is a topic, though, that I am very convinced the internet has had a very negative impact on, because the clickbait type sites, you know, the Huffington Post of the world, the Daily Mirrors, those, they really love to go with those stories because they generate a lot of traffic for them, and they're not really concerned with news judgment. And also, you know, individual Twitter users and bloggers and those types of things, they glom onto these types of things because they're the big outrage factor that they generate, you know, does get traffic. And so that's one place where I think I'm going to really argue for the traditional news judgment. Stodgy, absolutely. But a lot of the time, stodgy really is the right way to go.
Peggy Lowe, is it your sense, from maybe not having been here for the entire duration of Fred's rise and sort of the right through to his death, did the media get it right, or should we have paid more attention, less attention, any sort of overall sense of all this?
Well, to go back to your open, Steve, when you said it was a struggle for the media to decide what to do,
yeah.
It absolutely was a struggle. And it was really interesting. Jim Romanesco on his media blog this week called Tamari Quinn, who is the editor of the Capital Journal in Topeka, and wanted to talk about how they were covering the death of Phelps this week. And she had said that she had often gotten calls saying, why do you even cover him? If you quit covering him, he would go away. She's like, well, we did quit covering him and he did not go away.
Yeah.
He was such
a
professional publicity hound. So I think that for the most part, the media did do it well. I think that what was really interesting, too, is that even government officials answered to it well. Like, for instance, at Columbine, when we were covering the memorial services there, Phelps showed up and the local government officials came up with a First Amendment area that was kind of far away from, say, the mourners.
Yeah.
And so most people, I think, reacted pretty well to him. I mean, when even Jerry Falwell is denouncing this guy's a nut job, you know, it's not too hard to get people to stay away.
Well, Derek Donovan, again, from the Kansas City Star. Peggy Lowe just made an interesting point. I mean, should the media have ever covered Fred Phelps, given what his message was? Should the media have totally stayed away from him from day one and just, you know, outside of maybe his campaigns for office, he's a candidate, you got to sort of include him because he was a valid candidate. But in terms of his anti-gay bashing, protesting activities, should the media have stayed completely hands off?
You know, I don't think you can argue that anybody should completely stay away from it when it does generate a public outcry of some kind. But at the same time, you know, should the media cover the latest Klan outburst? Should the media, you know, any of these things? There's a really great anecdote in one of his books where P.G. O'Rourke's talking about advising a student newspaper where the editors are just wringing their hands about whether they should accept an ad that the KKK wants to buy there in print. And, you know, P.J.'s, I can't really repeat what his comment is, but he said it never really occurred to him they ought to just basically you know, tear it up and throw it away. So there are certain messages out there that they add nothing to the public discourse. These are not things that have a lot of organized, you know, political reality that's going to come out of them. And so, right, what is the news value in those questions?
So when did the Star and other outlets cover him? You mentioned one a few minutes ago, a car swerved and hit him or nearly hit him once upon a time. When did the papers weigh in?
He had a big Supreme Court judgment that went in his favor. That was fairly recently, and I'm sorry, I should have looked that up.
2005.
2005, okay. Mm-hmm. And that was A1 News, as it should have been, because, A, you know, the Star is not a Topeka newspaper, but Topeka is right in the Star's backyard. And also, that was a fundamental bit of legalese that is important to the nation in general.
And Fred Phelps, you're referring to a case that he won, right?
Right.
At the
he won
Supreme
it.
Court
Absolutely.
Level, a right to protest in certain places and that kind of thing.
He won it. It was the case was brought by the father of one of the military soldiers, you know, when Phelps had started protesting all the military soldiers who had come back from Afghanistan and saying, you know, he hoped more soldiers died. I mean, it was just absolutely profane because he said, and his reasoning was that the U.S. allows same-sex marriage. So he felt like he got to protest at these things. The father of one of the slain soldiers filed suit. It went as far as the U.S. Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court ruled 8-1 in Phelps' favor that basically, no matter how obscene your speech is, it's still protected.
You know, it's amazing to me, and this is apropos of nothing here in this conversation, but as a reporter and things that you're thinking and sort of mentally gearing up for, you know, over the years, he was so provocative. He was so in your face. Derek, you mentioned the incident when the car swerved toward him. It's amazing to me that no one ever tried harder to do damage to Fred Phelps over the years because, again, he was almost asking for it, and maybe – you know, who knows, there's a martyr complex there or whatever, but he just was absolutely inviting that kind of behavior over the years.
I've always said that's a testament to the good people of this nation.
Isn't that the truth?
Everybody in Topeka knows that he used to go out running every single night, and he followed the same path. Yeah, nobody attacked him.
Let me get our listeners involved here in the death of Fred Phelps and how the media covered him. What is the role of media outlets when it comes to a flame-throwing hate monger like the Reverend Fred Phelps? Should the news media have ever covered him or not? 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Again, 816-235-2888. You can also email us to uptodate@kcur.org or tweet us @kcuruptodate. You know, I'll recall another story from my time with him because you mentioned Mary Sanchez a few minutes ago, Derek, and she and I were dispatched over to Topeka. I was the State House correspondent in 93, and Mary came over to do a story with me, sort of a profile of him in 93. And, you know, I remember why we did that story. It was because that was the year the national media, at least in my recollection, sort of began to cover Fred. And the New York Times did a big takeout. The Washington Post did a big takeout. The LA Times was out doing a story on Fred. And suddenly, I think the papers sort of felt like, well, okay, the cat's out of the bag here. We've got to write something about him, which, of course, is a reason to do it, and it's also not a reason to do it.
Yeah, you know, I hope that this parallel is not going to be obscene in itself, but, you know, it's also an argument about coverage of media figures such as Sarah Palin or Alec Baldwin or, you know, these people who, A, are not elected officials, and, B, who say these very intentionally provocative things to get media coverage. And, you know, people just lap it up for some reason, whereas, A, these are not people who are really representative of conservatives or liberals in those two particular cases. And they really kind of set up these straw men opponents for people who disagree with them to characterize their, you know, the other side, quote unquote. And I do think that in general, the media gives way too much attention to those fringe voices. And it's really kind of strange as the internet has opened us up to so many more diversity, so much more diversity, so many different nuanced points of view that it's almost like the everyday, the things that we share, you know, what goes on the broadcast news and on talk radio has gotten even more reductive and kind of, you know, out there to characterize what the other side is saying.
And so much that is driven, you mentioned clickbait a few minutes ago, meaning outlets put up stories designed to attract attention and get people to click on them, which, of course, helps them with ad revenue and that kind of thing. Is that what's driving all this?
You know, I long ago tried to give up understanding what exactly the point is to some of those sites. You know, Huffington Post is to me just one of the most bizarre things in the world. I never thought it could possibly, you know, have gotten as huge as it has, because there's just such a lack of reasoning there. And I'm convinced that most of it is people who want to click on stuff that they disagree with so vehemently. You know, they love to get outraged by it.
Well, I would suggest that the Drudge Report is the same thing.
Absolutely. Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
The HuffPo is for the liberals and the Drudge is for the conservatives. Mm-hmm. And so it's clickbait for people who think the same or completely different.
Yeah. And I'm sorry. I am betraying the fact that I kind of forget about Drudge there because, yeah, he's the pioneer in this on the Internet. Absolutely.
How should the media have covered someone like Fred Phelps? 816-235-2888 is our phone number here again. You know, again, I have such strong memories of, you know, I got to know Fred, you know, in those days fairly well. And I have such strong memories of doing that story with Mary Sanchez back then, because we got into the compound in West Topeka and we sat down with Fred for a couple of hours and talked. And, you know, it was such an interesting thing because it was sort of a walled off compound behind the church and behind the house there. Lots of family members living in those houses. I remember one day, you know, Fred said, let's go out and sit back by the pool. And I'm thinking, oh, he's got a big pool back there. And we sort of walked back there. And the whole thing was just a little pathetic because the pool wasn't much bigger than the bathtub in my house. And I'm only exaggerating by a little. This was nothing elaborate or, you know, obviously well financed. It was just this little thing on this concrete slab and no trees and a sort of a simple fence around the backyard. And, you know, sitting back there with Fred by the pool was sort of a little different than what I thought. And then interviewing him for a couple of hours, this was not a stupid man, not a stupid man by any stretch of the word, a lawyer who was disbarred later by a federal court, you know, over in Kansas, but not a stupid man, had been very successful as a civil rights attorney, believe it or not, early in his career. But he would say things that made perfect sense to most people, and then a minute or two later would say something that was just completely gone and, you know, off the boards. And you would just sort of think to yourself, you know, in my mind, is this what madness is? And I don't know. I'm not a psychologist, but that's what sort of went through your mind, you know?
And I think that's a great point, Steve, yeah. Because, for instance, the Southern Poverty Law Center, which tracks hate groups, tracks Westboro Baptist and Fred Phelps. And they said there's no church about it. He is a cult of personality. It's mostly his relatives and his, you know, thousands of grandchildren and family members who are a part of this. They say that Westboro Baptist Church is arguably the most obnoxious and rabid hate group in America.
Mm-hmm.
And I might also commend USA Today this morning, who took the angle of not writing an op-ed about Phelps, but rather they wrote that with his death, the church may, you know, go away. Their future is hazy because it was this cult of personality. And they're quoting the Southern Poverty Law Center as saying, you know, sort of like neo-Nazi groups and others like this, when they've got that figurehead, when that figurehead goes away, they may go away. So I think that's an interesting part.
And I agree. And I will point out, though, there's been some speculation that Fred was disbarred or disowned by this church.
Excommunicated.
Thank you. Just a few years ago. And, you know, just last Sunday morning, your talk show host here was out for his morning run through Westwood on the Kansas side where I live. I was running by Bishop Miege and running by the church, St. Agnes there. And here was Phelps' crew out there protesting at 9 o'clock on a Sunday morning with Westwood Police stationed nearby just to keep an eye on things. Fred hasn't been a part of those protests for years, and yet that group still keeps showing up around the block here.
And they promised to protest this weekend in Kansas City, allegedly. They say they're going to be at the Kathy Griffin concert as well as the Lord concert. That's what's been going on Twitter anyway.
One thing also to remember is that it's far from the only cult. I mean, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of cults of people who live in compounds in this nation. I mean, readers give me story tips all the time. There is one cult in the Northland, one in KCK. However, they are very quiet. They are not people who go out and seek publicity. They probably are preaching some sort of separatist language inside their walls, because that's kind of how cults work. You know, they have to identify the cult members as being separate from the rest of the people, you know, the rest of the population. That's why you're special. That's why you're here. Those things, a lot of experts tell us, do fall apart fairly quickly once a figurehead is gone. So who knows?
How should the media cover Fred Phelps? How should it have covered Fred Phelps and his group? Peggy Lowe, Derek Donovan, both here to talk about it. Lots of phone calls. Let's go to some of them now. Michael from Kansas City, Missouri. Michael, good morning.
Good morning. I just thought, I was wondering how the media might address the situation covering his death. You know, I heard something on the radio this morning about his organization and wishing to respect his death and to give them privacy, and yet he spent his whole career, you know, making a spectacle of other people's death.
Just a little bit of irony there, right, Michael? Just a little bit of irony there. That's right. How will the newspaper cover his funeral? Derek, do you have a feel for that? I can assure our listeners that people are talking, editors are talking about this, trying to make a good judgment on how to proceed.
Yeah, and I should first of all clarify that I'm not an editor who makes news decisions. You know, I am very minimally involved in any of that process. Generally, journalists don't cover funerals. You know, you would cover a person's death, and you would, you know, if it's, for example, a head of state or something, do something about the funeral. Somebody at this level, even, you know, if he were a well-renowned pastor, if he had a bunch of celebrities and public figures that showed up, it might rise to the level of a news event. However, I doubt that that's going to happen here. So there would really have to be something significant about it that would make it news, I would think.
Well, I am in on those kinds of decisions here at KCUR, and we talked about this extensively this morning at our news meeting. First of all, the family is not saying if there is or is not a funeral, and they're keeping that a secret, I'm sure, to prevent the kind of thing they did for years, A. But B, we're watching it, you know, and we even said, okay, is this going to be something for Monday's news cast? And it's absolutely something that we're talking about, thinking about all the time. We're watching this weekend to see if anything happens, you know.
And there is also another sort of news hook into it, in that people who, of course, disliked Phelps intensely are having this conversation themselves about, well, should we try to go protest it or not? Because, you know, there have been a lot of groups, especially early on, who said, oh, I'm going to be the first person there. And then there have been a lot of other people who have said, no, we need to, you know, be bigger people.
And by and large, the reaction to his death, at least from my reading the last day or so, remarkably restrained, even from gay rights groups, those kinds of organizations. And it was striking to me that people really held their feelings in check here.
I think there's a couple of reasons for that. First of all, they're like, well, we're going to show some class and perhaps some Christianity and not do that. A. B, a lot of people are talking about how he did more for the gay rights movement than virtually anybody. I mean, obviously, you know, the gay rights movement was moving through the courts and through ballot initiatives and that kind of thing. But on the sidewalks and in the court of public opinion, Phelps made people take a stand.
Let me go to Tony here, who I think wants to ask about that very point. Tony from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. That was just my question, was if the media coverage, if the two people felt that the media coverage of Fred Phelps somehow worked against what he was trying to accomplish, and people were thinking, okay, this man has this extreme view and he's probably not alone, and this is wrong. So I just wonder if they feel that, you know, the media coverage worked against him. And I'll listen to the answer offline.
Yeah, I appreciate that very much, Tony. Thank you.
It absolutely did, don't you think, Derek?
Yeah. I think that in general, the media has a responsibility to expose any type of, you know, you can say incitement to violence, because I think that it ultimately was. But these sorts of things are generally societally less acceptable every day. And, you know, any kind of discrimination, I think that this is one of the places that the news media does, I think, fairly get a rap as being liberal. Yes, journalists in general are there to cover the totality of the human experience, and that includes minorities of all stripes.
And no question, during the arc of Fred Phelps anti-gay protesting here across the country, the story in terms of gay rights in this country has changed dramatically, very much the opposite way that Reverend Phelps wanted to see this play out. Let's go to Jim from Harrisonville. Jim, good morning.
Yes, the question was, should the media have covered
Phelps
from the start, I think. So I experienced a funeral in Harrisonville for a serviceman, and the people that came together to protest Fred Phelps or make sure that he didn't have any part of that was stunning. I think it held a mirror up to us and our intolerance of LGBT and anybody else. It was a good thing that we covered it. It held a mirror up to us. And I think we were disgusted by it.
I think your caller is absolutely right, and I like the use of his term mirror. There's been some headlines. For instance, the Daily Beast, one of their writers wrote a piece today that said, Fred Phelps, friend of the gays. That was the headline. There was some really moving postings on Facebook yesterday. Some gay friends of mine locally who grew up with Fred Phelps, you know, who had been in Topeka during their college years and had seen what he had done. And they basically said, hey, Fred did a little good. So let's thank him today on the day of his death. They just said he defined and advanced the issue of gay rights in America. He was an unsuspecting catalyst. He provided the unforgettable imagery, action, and words. He was the lens to understanding of our fundamental choice on gay and lesbian rights.
That's really interesting. Jim, thank you for your call. Sandra emailed us this. As a lesbian who wasn't out of the closet covering Fred Phelps for the Topeka Capital Journal, I can say that his campaign of vitriol was somewhat frightening. My responsibility was to cover the news, but at the same time, I found myself scared of having been the subject of one of his Fred facts, the documents that he used to put out, and I can understand where Sandra may have been coming from here. Let's go to Sue from Kansas City, Missouri. Sue, you're on Up to Date.
Yes, I think it pointed out the absurdity of the underlying beliefs that Phelps held. You're the media addressing it. People in the privacy of their own homes with dogma as their only belief system had a chance to reexamine their feelings in the light of that absurdity and see that, you know, they needed to take a second look.
Thank you, Sue. And boy, I wonder what Fred would say to all this if he was sitting at our table today. Interesting way this whole thing shook out. I want to thank our two panelists here today, Derek Donovan, the ombudsman for the Kansas City Star, and Peggy Lowe, a reporter here at KCUR. And thanks all our callers, too, for some very good comments. Thank you both for coming in.
My
so
pleasure.
Good to have you.
Good to be here.